Support for this public radio podcast comes from the dairy families who own Cabot Creamery, five generations of farming and making naturally aged cheddar cheese in Vermont. On the web at go.coop.
You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be running out of.
Come over here, kid. What is up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry. Stay hungry. Stay hungry.
You want some more?
Well, good evening, everyone. This is Betsy Fisher filling in for Michelle tonight on this rainy, rainy night. And welcome to Mouthful, Wine Country's most delicious hour. And I'm so pleased to be here tonight. Michelle is off celebrating 12th night, and I hope she's having a great time. In the studio with me tonight, I have two of, well, they'll blush when I say this, but two of Sonoma County's most revered restaurateurs, two gentlemen that I'm sure are very familiar to all of you out there, all of you foodies who listen to Mouthful. We have Dan Berman with us tonight, and Dan Berman owned a very fabulous restaurant, very successful for almost 15 years, right, Dan?
16,
excuse me. I get that wrong every time I say that. Mixed restaurant, and Dan has now been out of Mix and kind of gone on to another part of the food biz, right? What do you call yourself now? Culinary director?
Culinary director of Pacific Markets.
Right. And you enjoying that?
Yeah, it's good.
Good. All right. And that's a pretty big mouthful of a job for you,
it's
right?
A good sized job.
Big
yeah.
job there, right. In addition to Dan tonight, we have another fabulous restaurateur, Michael Hirschberg, with us. And Michael, you've been around the restaurant world a little bit, haven't you?
I did my 30 years of service, and I'm happy. I've been retired for four and a half years now from the restaurant.
And you're not really retired completely.
Well, I'm not
right?
the hands on guy that I used
right.
to be.
Right.
Still keep a hand in.
Right. Well, actually, it is interesting because both of you, neither of you actually are really running a restaurant anymore, but it's one of those things where you're not really completely escaping from it either because, Dan, you're still in the food biz, and certainly the business that you're in, supermarket business, certainly become a lot more diversified than your traditional grocery store supermarket that we tend to think of. So in what ways are you doing at Pacific Market reminds you of the restaurant business?
Well, I think that one of the things we talk about constantly is at the stores is the idea of trying to bring restaurant quality food into the markets. Mm-hmm. And as what I've noticed and what I've learned since I've been there about 3 years now, is that people's lives are so hectic all the time and they're so busy, so much going on. And when I look around this county, our community, I don't see a lot of kind of real moderately priced, family-oriented restaurants. So as a way to, you know, to kind of create better family time, quality time at home, the stores have kind of filled that niche. And when I started at the store, I was, you know, everyone talked about the deli. And so, of course, my first thought deli was, you know, you make sandwiches, right? Well, what I do, yeah, that's a, there's a lot of kinds of bologna, you know.
That's right.
I never knew there were so many kinds of salamis. But what I realized quickly is the deli is a bit of a misnomer, because it means, you know, hot food, the grab-and-go wall, all the cheese, the bakery, the catering.
And even sushi nowadays,
sushi,
right?
Sushi. Well, sushi is generally in the stores. It's interesting, but that's usually contracted out.
Ah.
There's one of two companies that do sushi for almost all the markets in the state of California.
Because that's such a specialty item.
But, but in that regard, it does come under the, you know, the umbrella of the deli. And it's certainly, yeah, it's great sushi, too. It's fabulous.
Oh, yeah,
I eat it two or three times a week.
Right. Well, I think Pacific Market, certainly anybody who lives in Santa Rosa knows that when you don't feel like cooking and you want to go out and get something quick and easy but really tasting like it's home cooking, you go to Pacific Market. I mean, you got the whole array of hot foods,
well,
short ribs, all that kind of stuff.
Our owners and you know, certainly Ken and Brad and Gary, I mean, they were really pioneers in a lot of that throughout the county. Ken was the first one to have a sushi bar and really emphasize all that fresh food and then bringing in the hot food like we have. Thing that's really interesting to see is the, you know, the big guys. It doesn't take them long to get on board with that. I don't think they do as good of a job as we do, but you see that. I was just in Tahoe, and I saw it up there, you know, Raley's. And certainly all the Safeway stores are lifestyle stores now. But a lot of the stuff they do isn't fresh and done from scratch like we do. So, so really still, you know, I mean, the basic foundation of a lot of our cooking is still based in, you know, classical training and preparation. And so, you know, you don't have chefs all throughout, but we have quite a few chefs in the stores.
Well, that's probably where, too, then you enjoy your job because you are a chef. And to me, I would think you being out of the restaurant business, a chef who's out of the restaurant business sometimes like a fish out of water, but you obviously have that satisfied to a certain degree working what you're where you're working. But tell me, what parts of the restaurant business that were rewarding to you do you miss? Is there anything?
No, there were some things.
Working on Mother's Day.
That was my favorite. Favorite holiday.
New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve. That was always a blast. You know,
now,
I was going to write
sarcastic.
I always wanted to write a book. You know, it was going to be a year in the life of the restaurant business. And I was going to start it on New Year's Eve, which has really got to be one of the most ridiculous days of the year.
It is crazy.
And then finish it the following year. But, you know, I started a couple times, but I had to go to work.
No time to write a book when you're actually in the business. You got to really wait a long time. So
well,
the rewarding parts of the business.
I would say that overall, I mean, from a really big picture, that, you know, when I look at my life, that is one of the proudest things I've ever done, was that idea of, because I think, you know, same as Michael, I mean, one of the things you learn is it's, I know a lot of things are symbiotic to life, but it's that idea of getting up and going to work and doing the best you can every day. And with food especially, it's being consistent and being honest about what you're doing. And I think that
that was
something
I was
very proud of.
Right, and that was definitely the key to your success. And it's oftentimes where the big failure happens.
Yep.
The consistency is one of the hardest things to attain and obviously keep, redundant there, but so true. I mean, 16 years owning and operating a restaurant is really tremendous when you look at the statistics out there and see the failure rates. And, you know, we all know it's really not a 90% failure rate as it was broadcast for so long, but it's, you know, it's still a pretty difficult venture to do successfully and somewhat happily. And you seem
it was good. I mean, and we certainly had our ups and downs, but it was a blast to go work with Kathleen every day, you know, and work that out. That became, I mean, a really fascinating and complex part of our relationship and how we defined guidelines. And there were times, and I know you can totally relate to this, that you, when the restaurant was just clicking, you know, I'd be behind the line cooking, and I would go out into the restaurant, and it was like just a perfect harmony.
Fabulous.
It was a symphony.
Love this business.
And
I
it was like, look
business.
At man, place is full, everyone's got wine on the table, and the kitchen's so smooth, and the waitress, the
it's
staff
like the
is happy,
dance
and
is happening.
The bar's full waiting for tables, and this is fabulous.
Right.
And then there was the other side.
Yeah, that's right. That's
this was
right.
rainy Tuesday nights in January. Yeah, there's nobody in the restaurant.
And of course, Michael, when he was at his best in his restaurants, he was always referred to as the Fred Astaire of the restaurant business. Because
No.
That sounds like you. That doesn't sound like him.
No, but you'd be out on the floor, and you know, but it's exactly what he described as. Yeah. That's what is the rewarding part of the business. It's part entertainment, right?
I got into the restaurant business because I was frustrated that I could never be a rock star or in show business.
That's right.
And
so I think that's why we're all in
it. The restaurant business was the next best thing. And because when I, this is back when I was in my 20s, when I first started to cook and put food out in front of people, they go, wow, you're really good. You would open a restaurant. Then I was 22. I didn't know any better.
And yet you did it
anyway. I did it. And to me, it was always a lot. Because I did theater in high school. I never really did in college, but I did in high school. And I always liked that idea that, you know, when the curtain goes up, the curtain goes up, and it's the same thing. It's 6 o'clock, and customers are coming into the restaurant. You better be ready. There's no excuses, and the show must go on.
Right.
And God knows what's going on backstage.
Right.
Doesn't matter what the customers see and the experience they receive. That's what it's all about. And I always liked that.
And that's what's part of the, that's what's rewarding about it, though, is it's that pressure to perform that just keeps you dancing. And
we could do a whole show on disasters. I'm just thinking about it.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Just like, oh, gosh, I don't believe it. How did that happen?
Yeah,
you know?
Right. Well, and those are some of the challenging aspects. So what were some of the things that really made you wonder when occasionally and you'd wake up in the morning and go, I don't know about this?
Well, one of the things was those, you know, 2 a.m. phone calls. You know, I always loved that. You know, we'd lock the keys out, or, you know,
burglar
somebody
alarms
just
going
robbed
off
the place or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, one year they threw the safe right through the plate glass window, right?
I remember that. Oh, gosh.
I think the most challenging thing, though, was, I think probably the most challenging thing was not letting, and I don't know if I was ever totally successful at this. Well, obviously I wasn't, but not letting the restaurant just dictate your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we were pretty good at that, about that, Kathleen and I. I think Michael was always good about that. I don't think a lot of people are very good about that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I know.
It's the technician part of the thing where you're not delegating enough, and you're just kind of doing everything yourself.
Yeah.
Well, most restaurateurs have to ask themselves, do I own this restaurant or does this restaurant own me?
Right.
And, you know, it's when you have those glorious moments when everything is working great, you go, oh, I'm so happy to be a restaurant owner. And then you realize, on the other side of the coin, you just can't get away for a month. You can't do this. You can't do that. You miss Little League games. You miss Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. You miss all the things that normal people do. When I retired and I suddenly went to dinner parties at people's houses on Saturday night, I hadn't done that in 30 years. I was 22 when I started. I was 52 when I sold Sassafras to Jack. And suddenly, we were invited to people's...
Did you know what to do?
I didn't know what to do. It was so peculiar. I said, this is what people do on Saturday night. I always thought they went to restaurants on Saturday night. But
I work weekends, but I've become pretty territorial about them, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, wait a minute.
Right.
I'm not, you know, I don't want to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I still do because I'm still in retail. And not all the time. And when I need to work, I work. But yeah, that's a funny. I remember that whole period there when after we sold, it was like, gosh, we can go out on a date. And,
yeah, this
you know.
Is wild. This is.
Yeah, you know, getting in the restaurant business, I think, there are so many misconceptions about getting in the business, and it's that old joke, oh, I have a great recipe, and my mother says I make the best spaghetti sauce, so I should go in the business. It's probably the worst reason to go in the business, right?
Yes.
What kind of personality do you have to have to be in this business?
Well, you have to totally believe in yourself, because otherwise you would never do it. And everyone who gets into the restaurant does take some kind of leap of faith. And then the ones who learn quickly and figure out the fact that it's a business above and beyond just about cooking succeed. And those people who can't really make the jump and see the whole big picture and running a business.
It's a total picture, isn't it?
I cook more now that I've retired than I did when I was in the restaurant business. Now, Dan was pretty much a chef right all through his career, whereas I was a chef for about the first half of my career, and then I kind of migrated to the front of the house and ran it more from a business point of view. But I love cooking again now that I'm not in the restaurant business. I don't have to deal with quantities. I'm just my wife and myself. My kids are grown up and moved away.
Yeah.
And
But it really is, it is seeing the whole big picture and being able to jump in anywhere you need to.
Right.
I mean, wouldn't you say that's true, too?
I think you have to have a really good plan, too. And you do. I think you have to really understand, you know, what you do well and what you don't do well. And then you have to plug in the holes of what you don't do. Because, I mean, I agree with Michael. I know one of the things with Kathleen and I was that we were both chefs and we were always in the back. And really, you know, people really want to see the owner. I mean, they want to have contact with people. So, I mean, if you're going in as a partnership, it's really great to have somebody that's on the front of the house. Either that or some kind of a name, you know, a figurehead, whether it's a manager that's been with you for a long time or something that people can really relate to. Because I just don't think that food is really the most important thing at that point.
That's interesting because that's debated a lot. It really is. I mean, oftentimes, I mean, we look at Food Network nowadays and it's all about the food and all about the chef. Those of us who are not in the chef world, such as myself, and in the front house part of the world, I get disturbed when I don't see enough emphasis on the whole hospitality thing. Mm-hmm. And people go out not just to eat great food, but they go out to be entertained, to have a wonderful experience. And, you know, that has to be a big part of it,
but
right?
But you even see that on the Food Network. People that are really popular, you know.
That's true.
Are the personalities. And there's very few of them that are I'm not saying they're not all good, but there are very few of them that are really good chefs and really good personalities.
Right, because they get that's the whole picture.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think also when you go into a restaurant and you don't pick up that kind of wonderful friendliness and openness and you know, being greeted well, that's kind of a downer. And even if the food is really terrific coming out of the kitchen.
Yeah, if you don't feel welcome.
Yeah, yeah. That's
well, my brother gave me a talking to. I was pretty much a back-of-the-house man for the first half of my career, and my brother came out for a while. Like Dan said, it's good to have somebody up front who, A, you trust completely, and B, has a good personality. So my brother did that when we first launched Sienna. And after a little while, he started lecturing me about how I had to be more friendly, more outgoing, get out there.
You?
I didn't like it. I was really a turtle in my early days, and I liked being back in my shell. I was quite introverted, and he really changed me, and he just said, you know, you've got to come out. You've got to smile. You've got to schmooze. You've got to do all those things. And then he left. And when he left the company, then I did come out, and it totally changed my personality, and I became a really different person after that. And, yeah, I mean, most people wouldn't guess that I'm an introvert, but I really By you know, chemical nature, I'm happy just locking myself in the room and working by myself.
Well, I'll tell you, I think that's one of the insider business things that that bug me a lot about the business is the first person that you see when you walk into a restaurant, and usually the first person who greets you is a $10 an hour employee.
Never in my restaurant.
Who rarely
was ever
either trained properly, usually not hired for all the qualities that a person like that should be hired for, which is bubbly personality, being, you know, all that kind of stuff. It drives me crazy. You walk into a door and the first thing they say is,
they usually hire because they look nice in a short skirt, is what they're usually hired.
Or even better, if you're alone and they say, just one, you know, and that immediately sets the wrong tone.
Yeah. A lot of restaurants hire young girls to do that job, and I always found that young girls are intimidated talking to adults, and now that we're adults, you know, they just look at adults as if they were parents or something, and so they just would clam up and freeze up where, you know, and they don't know who's who in the community. So when the mayor walks in, or somebody important person, or just an important client of that restaurant walks in, you know,
it's all about right. And you can't garner regular guests that way. You can't build up. You know, one of the things we're proud about, and you guys know this, and some of you out there in Radio Land know this, at Santa Rosa Junior College where I work, we have a restaurant, and we have. I would estimate we have probably about 60% of our clientele is easily regular guests who come to us every week, all the time. They love coming to a place, and I know we're a little different because we have students, so you get to watch some entertainment, you see people developing, practicing, and all of that. But I also think it's because we're all committed to making sure that when they walk in that door, we know that they're there so that we can give them the best everything that we can. And it's just really all about
There's a lot
that.
Of enthusiasm down there is what
totally.
It is. You know?
Totally,
and
yeah.
People can feel that.
Right. Now, let's get back to food for a minute. In your restaurant, Dan, the last year you had it open, what were some of the most popular items on your menu?
Oh, gosh. Well, we had one dish that we just couldn't take off that we'd had for... It was on the first menu, and it was on every menu, and it was that basil fettuccine with smoked chicken, sun-dried tomato, and Nisswa olives.
Oh,
so,
I can hear the audience out there going, I remember that one.
Yeah. Still have requests for that.
Yeah.
But, you know, we used to change. We had a number of... We had a handful of dishes that we kept the same because we've gotten to that point with our clientele where they didn't really want us to change them. But then we did change things pretty regularly, pretty seasonally. I know we loved to, you know, we had a different fresh fish dish every night that was just based on availability of what the seafood was. And then we just had really a handful of things. I know there was a pear salad that we kept on the menu and a spinach salad that we had regularly.
How about that? Didn't you have a great chicken pot pie?
Oh, yeah, chicken pot pie, that's right.
I remember
the
that.
Chicken pot pie.
That crust was different.
That's
it was
right.
really great. Yes.
Yeah. And that was about lunch. And I had I always thought one time would be a great concept to take all the dishes. You probably thought about this a couple times. All the dishes over the years from Mix that were really kind of bistro style, and then just open up a restaurant like that. So you had really simple grilled food, but prepared well with good quality. But then you had stuff like the basil fettuccine, good spinach salad, chicken pot pie, you know,
like
things like that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And not a big menu, you know. And then like three or four of Kathleen's desserts, like a creme brulee,
Gotta have that.
You know, a few things like that. And just dial it in totally, and you hardly ever change except for a few specials.
And just tell people, no, you can't have anything else.
You have one chef and cooks, right?
All right, uh-huh.
And you do a lot of volume, you make $1 million.
I'm surprised you haven't done that menu at Pacific Market.
We don't have
basil
all that
fettuccine
kind of cooking.
Doesn't translate.
No,
to
not in a hot
table. Well,
yeah, no.
And what about you, Michael? In your last restaurant?
God, do I remember my last restaurant?
Or any of them? Well, any of them? It doesn't.
What
have to
I really
be last
liked
one.
In it, you know, I'm quite a Francophile and a Europhile and stuff. So I really liked doing Italian and French things in my restaurant.
And Italian still is number one selling.
Yeah,
You know.
But the wine was really what was all about to me, and I always match my food to wines, and the wines really. Kind of called the shots in a lot of ways. Any menu items we had, it had to go well with wine. So we didn't do really sugary things. We didn't do really peppery things. We didn't do things that were just didn't fit the niche. And I really think, you know, what I brought to the table was the whole wine thing. I remember when we opened Mistral and I started talking about doing wine flights, you know, 3 2-ounce tastes at the same time. And everybody was looking at me like, What is that word, flight?
And
I mean,
nobody
had ever
everywhere.
Heard of it. I know. And that's one of my little feathers in my cap that I came up. Because my feeling is when you go to a restaurant, the difference between dining at home or dining at a friend's house, even a friend who can cook well, is that you get to sample lots of different things. And, you know, it's more fun to go out with two or three or four people. And, you know, I don't know, my wife and I, we share food across the table. We never get the same thing. It's like a sacrilege to go in a restaurant and two people order the same plate. So I like that small plate thing, and I like the idea of tasting two or three different wines. We went to Sass Fresh just the other night. We ordered 4 different plates and 9 different 2-ounce tastes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I love that. I mean, that to me is just...
We did that at JoJo's Sushi the other day with sake and got the tasting sampler of sake, and that was...
Yeah, I mean, that's the
really
difference. You know, you're not going to do that at home. You're not going to open 9 bottles of wine and pour yourself, you know, so...
So as far as the most popular selling things, do you think were those items kinds of the types of foods that are still selling nowadays? I mean, do you see any?
Sonoma County, I'm glad I'm not a restaurant owner in Sonoma County because it's tough. It's really tough.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a lot easier to be one in Des Moines because...
a little more static there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I think it's more predictable. And, you know, and this is a real little melting pot for trends and things like that. And we're expected to be on the cutting edge because so many people come up and visit the wineries and expect a culinary experience when they go out. And but yet again, a lot of the local people, they're kind of meat and potatoes types, and you know, they like more hearty food. And the whole idea that I was just touting sampling and small plates, it kind of leaves them cold. They go, I feel like I have to go out for dinner after I go to a restaurant like that, you know.
Right.
So, oh my God, and then the whole Asian influences that we have. I mean, I love eating Asian food. Mm-hmm. It's just, to me, it's just wonderful. It's just the way it feels good in your stomach.
It's amazing how Sonoma County really has adapted so well to so many Asian restaurants and the different styles.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know Asian cuisine enough to be able to tell the difference between Thai and, you know, all the renditions of it, but it's so interesting to go out and try it all. And one of the things we've noticed at school in the culinary arts program, we have a lot more classes now being offered that are Asian classes because mm-hmm. there is so much more demand for that. Those classes are completely full every time we offer them. People want to sample the food by, you know, instructors who know how to cook it, and then they also want to learn how to do it at home, too. Do you see any of that at the markets?
Yeah.
I mean, are people getting interested in those kind of, in buying those products?
Well, one of the cool things about the market, and which I noticed right away, is that I get to see stuff that a lot of restaurateurs never see. Mm. I mean, we have a...
What do you mean by that?
Well, the produce department in Rohnert Park is... I mean, he'll bring in anything at any time. So he'll bring in one little box of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I oftentimes get to see certain products and trends because of the trade shows that I wind up going to.
Uh-huh.
And they kind of start someplace, and then they're not really popular. And then once they gain a little popularity, they start to kind of move on to a lot of restaurant menus.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll see certain fruits and vegetables that I've never heard of before. Just because they're all of a sudden out there, and they may be in, you know, a restaurant, say, like a Cyrus, but I don't eat in Cyrus all that often, you know. So it's not like I'm going to see that. A more, you know, restaurant like Mix or something, you know, we would try stuff. But just like you said, a lot of times you're cooking for your clientele.
Yeah, and the orders just come out of the chef's head, whereas you get to see everything that and the produce buyer is buying everything.
He's buying everything. So I've accessed all that stuff. So... one of the other things is what I'm seeing is a lot of the products that are offered to us are being created by chefs.
Hmm.
So I'm seeing products that I can take and prepare that were created by a chef in the first place.
Hmm.
So it'd be like Michael or I making something mm-hmm. and then selling it to the store.
Mm-hmm.
And inclusive in that is a whole Asian line of products.
Hmm.
So I'm seeing a really good quality line of Indian foods.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing a really good quality line of all different types of Asian foods.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty interesting. I mean, you know, some of it is fairly pedestrian, but some of it is just really good quality. You can be very discerning with it.
I think it's that G word. It's the globalization word again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, one of the trends that I've been reading about is the democratization of fine food and how...
Democratization.
She's
full
of big
terrible
words.
Terrible dark jargon.
You can tell she's a teacher.
It just means that there's a lot more food accessible to a lot more people, and the food is much more diverse. And maybe we're just lucky in Sonoma County.
I think we're lucky in Sonoma County.
Yeah.
I don't see that
one. Oh,
yeah,
no, you don't see it in the Midwest.
Yeah.
No, I mean, definitely. You see it on the coast.
I see it in the garnishes.
In the big cities, yeah.
Right, but
yeah.
I don't see it in the quality of the product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to take a short break here, and then we're going to come back. I'm talking with Dan Berman of Pacific Market and
Dan
Michael
Berger.
Hirschberg.
I do wine,
well, you
too.
Like wine, too.
Yeah.
Right. And Michael Hirschberg, and we'll be right back.
Je n'avais jamais ôté mon chapeau devant personne. Maintenant je rampe et je fais le beau quand elle me sonne. J'étais chien méchant, elle me fait manger dans sa menotte. J'avais des dents de loup, je les ai changées pour des quenottes. Je me suis fait tout petit devant une poupée qui ferme les yeux quand on la couche.
Welcome back to Mouthful. This is Betsy Fisher subbing for Michelle tonight, and we're in a nice little conversation here about the restaurant business, and I'm with Michael Hirschberg and Dan Berman, and we've talked a little bit about their experience in the restaurant business, and the other reason the three of us are here tonight is because the three of us are teaching a new class this spring at Santa Rosa Junior College in the Culinary Arts Program, and actually Dan is teaching a couple classes on his own called Intro to Wine in the Restaurant, and and beverage management, which is all about, well, if you own a restaurant, you better know something about all kinds of beverages and certainly wine. And then the three of us also teach a class called restaurant operations. So any of you out there, budding restaurateurs, we can help you out. If you come to one of our classes, you can get information about the culinary arts program at Santa Rosa Junior College and all of our great classes by going online to www.santarosa.edu, and all of the classes that you can sign up for are online, and certainly the spring catalog has recently been mailed to everybody in the Santa Rosa area. So our culinary arts program is blossoming and growing like crazy, and not only do we now have the emphasis not just on becoming a chef, but certainly becoming a business person as well in our restaurant operations class, and these other types of classes are there. And we hope if you're interested, you'll give us a try.
It's not a brand new class because we did it last
spring. We taught it. We started last spring. It was very successful.
That's why I'm doing it again, because I was happy.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
These people aren't guinea pigs that are coming to the class. The first class might have been guinea pigs.
That's right. Well, sometimes classes like this that are business oriented, when they're, we like to say, buried in a college catalog, sometimes the public doesn't know that they're out there.
Right.
So that's the other reason why we're here. So we can talk a little bit about that class. And Michael, since you've stepped forward here, what Michael talks about in class, which is really one of the most, I think, challenging parts of running a restaurant, is the whole money stuff, the whole financial stuff.
Critical.
Which is totally critical, right? And how many restaurateurs don't get that in the beginning?
Yeah. Oblivion.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my new job.
Right.
Most people out there may not know. You keep saying I'm a restaurateur. I've been a restaurateur for 4.5 years
Yeah,
now.
But you'll never not be one, Michael.
Well, no, it's like malaria. Once you've been bitten, you come back. But I'm never going to have the urge to go open a little mom and pop again. And not, my wife would disown me. But what I'm doing now in my
breakfast
career,
lunch.
I'm still in the restaurant business, is I work with all these different restaurants, about 16 or 18 different restaurants, and I do books and finances for them, because I really found that, people came to me and they said, do you understand QuickBooks? And in the last few years of running my own restaurants, I actually did my own bookkeeping and everything like that. I just liked it. To me, it was like playing a video game, sitting down in front of a monitor and making all the things jive. So I've created a whole new business for myself doing restaurant books, and I found out that a lot of the creative chef mentalities, it's the left brain, the right brain, and whatever the brain is the left, the creative one. Yeah, well, a lot of chefs have a lot of that creative energy, and they don't have any brass tacks. Like,
you're being very kind right now.
Balancing a checkbook is just kind of like, an unknown quantity of them. So I found a little market niche for myself by doing that. And so that's my new business, and that's what I talk about in the class. When you first asked me to work in the class, and Michael Salinger, the department head of the culinary, has asked me to teach class, and I said, I don't want to talk about anything anymore about the kitchen and cooking and sanitation and knife skills, and it's all very, very important, valuable stuff, but I have found what I like to do and talk about in the restaurant business now, and that's it's a very small wedge of the pie. It's a very small part of anyone's activity, but it's critical. It's absolutely critical.
When people ask me,
payroll can't be met, and vendors aren't paid, and taxes aren't paid, it's a slippery slope, and you end up in bankruptcy really quickly if you don't manage your money.
When people talk to me about, give me some tips about opening a restaurant, and there's a lot of things, but one of the very first things I stress to them is that before you open the door, you have to know where every penny is going.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many people that open up and they have no idea. At the end of the day, they go, oh, look, we got this much money.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And they don't know what to do with it or how to balance
where it came
for
from,
the day,
where it goes.
What sold, what proportion of the sales were food, what was wine, what was what, mm-hmm. who's stealing from me and who's not.
I know owners who think they know how much they have because they go online and look at their bank balance.
Right.
I had a partner like that. My first partner. Yeah. My only partner was like that.
I said, that's
until
how much
the bank called and said, oh, by the way, you're overdrawn.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's amazing how many people think all we got to do is get open, because as soon as we have sales coming in, we'll be okay.
For the first 30 days, and then the bills are due.
And yet, you really have to have a chunk of money nowadays if you're going to open up a new restaurant. You have to have a chunk of money because you've got to be able to go for 6 months to a year before you even touch those sales.
And then depending on what kind of a restaurant you have, what size you have.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't understand that either.
Mm-hmm.
I can look at a restaurant now, and just by the size of it, I know, is it a business? Is it a lifestyle? I mean, a lot of people don't realize that. You know, they're never going to make too much because they don't have, they're never going to make enough to break away because they don't have enough seats. And then to not take care of the money in the first place, if they just lose sight of a few little things, Oh my gosh!
The best restaurants,
right the beginning.
And I'm working with a whole bunch of great restaurants, and the best restaurants are making just a few percent profit.
That's right.
You know, they take in $100 and they keep two or three for themselves.
Yeah.
So if you obviously don't pay attention to details, the chance of that being able to net that two or three out of that 100 really disappears.
It's amazing.
And it's very easy to lose
two or three. How little
money
you can make in the restaurant business. Yeah. It's like the national average for independent restaurants is around 6 to 8%. And certainly if you have bigger restaurants and chains and all that, you can do more. But it's true that if you have that small amount to work with, if you don't watch, you know, every dime, you're in big trouble.
I think, you know, you ask one of the hardest things about the business, and I try to stress that with some of my employees now. I have 90 people that I look out for in three stores, and you know, layers of management that I supervise, and it's that whole idea of, you know, you have to manage hospitality every single day. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to go in every day expecting something to go wrong, and you have to be
have plan B and C all the time,
and you have to do it with a smile on your face and not, you know, but you need to be flexible and prepared to do it, and especially in the restaurant. You know, every day, you know, you go in, you have a schedule in place, and then we have weather like we had over the weekend, right? Well,
power failure in Sebastopol Friday night.
Yeah. in this county, the first time anything happens, nobody goes out.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
Remember?
Yeah. Right, yeah.
First time there's a heat wave, nobody goes out.
Right.
First time it's really cold weather, nobody goes out. So it's like you're fully staffed.
Right.
And now you go through one of this storm, and that labor will just kill you, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, all right, I got to go in today, being prepared to readjust the schedule, to let some people go home. And the thing is, the staff doesn't want to be there if they're not making money anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, I mean, the waiters especially, the wait staff, they just soon go do something else. Mm-hmm. If they're just going to stand around and get paid minimum wage, which I know is exorbitant for the restaurant industry at this point.
California.
But still.
Yeah, that's true. What are some of the trends that you think we're going to be seeing? What are some of the ones that started last year that we think might be successful in the restaurant business, continue to be, or maybe some new things coming down the pike? Let's start off with one of the most obvious ones, small plates. Do you think that's here to stay?
I sure hope so, because that's the way I really like to eat. I mean, mm-hmm. As I just said before, I think it's a way to sample a number of things instead of passing your plate around and having everybody take a bite. Mm-hmm. I think that's great. But there are people, it's really interesting when I go out to eat with other people.
Yeah.
A lot of times what I propose is, I mean, I'll plug Willie's Wine Bar because I think it's one mm-hmm. of my favorite restaurants. And when they first opened, I thought it was a revelation. But I found a way to make every restaurant like Willie's Wine Bar if you're with another couple.
Sure.
So if there's four people, you order a flight of this and a flight of that. Right. So you order three appetizers and you put them in the middle of the table as family style, and then everybody has their own bare plate, and you just serve yourself off of that. And then you order two salads, and then you order maybe just two or three entrees, but everyone's tasted three appetizers, two salads, three entrees, three desserts, whatever you want, and you have this. That's the way I like to eat. Mm-hmm. And the small plates just kind of facilitates
mm-hmm.
that. So,
yeah.
But I know a lot of people who, you know,
they gotta have their entree.
When I go with a couple I've never been out to dinner with, I kind of really gingerly. It's almost like you know, are you a swinger or something? You know, would you like to share a plate here or something? You know, and you're a little bit nervous about what they're gonna say. No, I like this is my plate. They're very territorial about it, and they don't want to share it, which is perfectly fine. But so that you know, will small plates go further? I don't know. And Asian food lends itself to really small plates.
Yeah,
and the whole dim
true.
Sum thing, and sushi is small plates, isn't it? And all that.
I think small plates are really big on the West Coast and the East Coast and in the major metropolitan areas. Mm-hmm. I from what I read, you know, Iowans and you know folks in Illinois aren't as big on it as we are out here.
No way.
Yeah.
I think in terms of trends, one of the things I'm not a big trend guy. You know, I think that. We get exposed to so many different tastes because we have such a bounty of product
mm-hmm.
to use. And
yeah.
when you travel and you go other places,
yeah, you really see that.
The quality is in the garnish, not what's on the plate,
right?
A lot of time and energy goes into that, whatever it is.
Right. And there's an obliviousness to seasonality, too.
Yeah,
you'll see
a
slice of tomato you know, that's like pale orange
paint,
in the middle of January, whereas we don't do that here, you know, hopefully.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like I remember years ago going to Hawaii and you couldn't get a piece of fish that wasn't cooked till it was dead and with a heavy cream sauce, like what with a Cabernet, right? Uh-huh. What's wrong with this picture, you know? But around here, so I think here key is, I think we're going to keep the one big trend, one of the trends I think we will see is fresher and raw product. Mm. So it'll come to us cooked less than before, cooked less than 118 degrees. So it'll still preserve all its nutrients. Mm. And I think what we're going to see more and more of that, we're going to see different applications of nuts and so that they're, you know, they're done in a way that they're, you know, they lose some of their fat but retain their proteins. And
so it's a real continuation of the fresh, seasonal, local, organic kind of thing.
I mean, that's
not going away.
I saw the guy, he was really interesting at one of the one of the shows I went to. Who's the guy? He's really funny. He does the chef thing, kind of balding, and he gave up. He got up and talked on the Food Network. Glasses.
Alton Brown.
Alton Brown. Yeah,
yeah.
He was really good, and he talked about the way we look at food and all the different things.
Very scientific in some ways.
But one thing he said was that the one thing people can get their hands around is local.
Yeah.
That's the one term people can relate to.
Right.
Because you start talking about, you know, natural and organic and, you know, regional. What the heck does all that mean?
A lot of gray area.
But local,
there, yeah.
You know, you can define, everyone can define local in a way that makes sense to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be, and one product is different than another in terms of local, right? Like,
sure.
Like with us, beef, we're really seeing some really great grass-fed beef now.
I was going to ask you about that.
Better from Mendocino.
Ah, mm-hmm.
And
okay.
So that's a little ways away, mm-hmm. but you could define that as local, right?
Yeah.
I mean, certainly seafood and duck and poultry, mm-hmm. you'd mm-hmm. say local would be 15 miles away,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so I think it's interesting in that regard.
And that can happen in Iowa and other places, mm-hmm. too, because they, you know, maybe not North Dakota.
And more and more, I think, you know.
But there's Jersey tomatoes that people rave about, you know, and there's already blackberries and there's this and that.
So, and wine in almost every state. Yeah. And
that's definitely happening now, more and more. I mean, I read about it all the time, and it, in fact, there's the new word of this next year, as I told you before we went on the air.
Another
today,
big word.
The locavores. People are turning into locavores. And you know, we've been doing that here in Sonoma County in Northern California
for years.
Yeah. But it's really starting to, as you said, Michael, people even in these other places in the country that we don't normally think of right away as a food place, they're figuring out, well, what can we grow mm-hmm. in our backyard and let's make it part of our local cuisine. That's kind of cool.
Right. And you can bake bread and make cheeses anywhere.
Right.
And you know, and in terms of like trends, I want to say that there, and I know Mike feels exactly the same way. I'm sure you do too. Well, I know you do too. There's always a place for really good food, you know.
Oh, totally.
I think right off the bat of K&L Bistro, mm-hmm. and that, you know, they just make really good food, mm-hmm. you know, and they're always going to be good restaurants.
And they got a Michelin,
you know, Mark
star
Malicki's,
for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, opened up. I know Michelle loves Mark. Mark's mm-hmm. a great guy, and he's just always made really good, interesting food. So, I mean, those guys don't follow trends. I mean, I know I got to the point with the restaurant where I didn't follow trends. It was seasonal, and was it appropriate for wine? And
if I ever did a restaurant again, I would do something like Mark's Malicki is doing right now, because it's just so much fun. It's just
an
extension.
Burgers and tacos.
It's just an extension of your dining room. You know, say, this is what we have for dinner tonight. I remember when Willowside was in its heyday, you know, and it had a small menu, and, you know, that you take it or leave it. There's three or four dishes. That's all we do. We're only open a couple nights a week. Come by if you want to have dinner. If you don't want to have dinner. You know.
But you've got to, though, be able to, going back to being successful at running a restaurant, you know, you got to be able to put all the other pieces together so that you can do exactly what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring up trends is only because if you're going to open a business like a restaurant, you do have to be aware to a certain degree of, you know, what the public wants. I mean, you got to be able to do what you want to do, but you have to constantly be listening to your customer.
But you can't go the other extreme either, which is try to be everything to everybody. Because when you do that, you just add you turn beige. You have no color.
Right.
You have no sparkle.
Right.
You have nothing that really sets you apart from anybody.
I mean, what you're talking about a lot of ways is having a good game plan when you go into
a concept.
It. You know, I mean, and then you bring in your location and the size of your restaurant and, you know, the kind of personality you want to have. What do you want it to look like, and the design of
right,
it.
Right, you have
know,
to be thoughtful those, yeah, about that. And
it's
you,
like
and you
a
really,
whole,
yeah,
the whole ball of wax, you
right,
know.
You have to be thoughtful about your concept. You have to think about, you know, is my location right for what I'm going to be doing? Are there people that are going to, are there going to be enough people coming mm-hmm. by, or, you know, all those
some
kinds
of
things.
Some of this is so simple, seemingly. It's so much common sense, but we seem to get away from that. I remember one of the first chefs I had said to me, you know, it doesn't matter what you do, just make sure that you're totally honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, if you're going to do hamburgers, if what you do well is hamburgers, make the best hamburger you can. Because you do hamburgers well, don't think that you can do French food on your menu.
Yeah.
And because a lot of times the hardest thing to do is the simplest stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you cook a perfect omelet?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Can you mm-hmm. make a perfect medium rare hamburger?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, those sometimes are much harder than doing the stuff that you can cover up with a sauce or
right.
whatever. You
totally.
Know?
That's right, because it's right there and it's got to be good. How about, Dan, the trends in beverages? Because, you know, what you're going to be teaching in our program is all about running a beverage program.
Well, I see that, man, because, you know, I mean, we have a direct link to these huge liquor distributors.
Yeah, right.
And it's amazing, I mean, the stuff that's out there now.
Well,
I mean,
of course, everybody's talking about absinthe now, but, I mean, there's all kinds of cocktails
oh, gosh,
that are interesting.
It's crazy.
I mean, coffee and tea
I never knew
still.
There was so... Oh, coffee is huge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Tea is huge.
Yeah.
You go to these shows, these trade shows,
yeah.
and, I mean, it's all about ginger... And green
white,
tea,
white tea now,
and
isn't
white
it?
Tea,
yeah, yeah.
and all these different kinds of
coffee.
I'm just not hip anymore.
Oh, it's unbelievable, and the liquors are unbelievable. I mean, you have no idea how many kind. Well, I'm sure you do, but there's like 50 different kinds of vodka now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was looking at the store the other day because
yeah.
we were going to do an ad for cocktails, and I was going down the line looking at, you know, pomegranate vodka and blood orange vodka
yeah.
and.
Yeah.
On and on and on. And now that's spilled over into rum
yeah.
and every other beverage that you could possibly think of and the mixers that go with it. I mean, there's this really great mojito mix out there. You don't have to do it from scratch anymore.
It's amazing. That's a whole other piece that if you have a bar in your restaurant, you got to start getting smart about that. I would
it's one
suspect,
thing I know nothing about. I've never, I could never, you know, I prided myself that in my heyday as a restaurateur, I could get on the line. I could work any position on the line.
Yeah.
I could probably whip together dessert if I had to. I could run every position in the dining room. I could never work behind the bar. Didn't know one end of a shaker from the other. And I mean, I don't drink liquor.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
I mean, I don't
right.
have anything against it, but I drink wine, you know. And
yeah, well, you could do it because you have an intensely detailed
I'm
knowledge
amazed
about wine,
by bartenders, though. You know,
but,
you call a drink
right.
to them, and they
right.
scoop a little
right.
bit of this and a little.
But
stuff.
It is amazing
oh.
how I mean, you've really got to stay on top of stuff if you have a bar. I mean, look at Mark and Terry. I mean, they've decided mm-hmm. they don't want to do that part anymore.
They're food people first,
right? Absolutely.
Well, the guy like a. The guy up at Cyrus, he's become incredibly famous.
Absolutely,
you know,
right.
And he's
oh,
always
herbs
up.
In the in
oh,
the
yeah.
drinks
oh,
and all that neat kind of
it's
stuff.
Amazing, yeah.
yeah.
And constantly different, and it's the same as food. It follows the seasonality issues
right.
of
right.
you know lighter and
right.
refreshing in the summer and
yeah.
more. Full on in the winter. And
it's interesting because it almost, I mean, the three of us have been winos for a long time, and everybody knows what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And our audience, they're all winos too. But, I mean, it's like wine can be, I mean, there's a lot to learn about wine, but as you say,
fortunately,
wine almost
we've gotten
seems,
away from wine coolers.
Yeah. But wine almost seems simple compared to all this
right.
all this other stuff that's coming out
It's all based
there.
On grape.
Yeah, that's right.
It's red and it's white. Maybe it's pink.
Another thing that's interesting in the beverage world is the whole controversy now about bottled wine. Water, you
no.
know, I mean, and how
I'm all for it, to tell you the truth. I'm mm-hmm. all for the get rid of the $10 bottled water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I
mean,
think it's ridiculous.
I don't.
Well,
ever,
it's lifestyle you're buying.
I don't
it's
think
not the water. I mean,
water ever really got off the ground here in Sonoma County
yeah,
and fine
did.
Dine
well,
to a great, really
well,
to
what,
big degree.
Water's I mean, good to have if you want something different than just the tap water. If you want something fizzy because you like fizzy or you
yeah,
want
like
something
like,
and in places
right,
where the water,
water
doesn't taste good, which
right.
is a lot of places,
right?
Especially in Santa Rosa with all the hard water.
There's some
right.
there's
but
some places where the chlorine is so stinky
around.
In the water that it is, yeah, but it shouldn't be expensive.
Yeah, right.
It's just water.
Right.
But it is.
Yeah, it's because you're buying the lifestyle, the labeling, the packaging. You know, they're laughing all the way to the banks.
Yeah, they are. And as far as coffee goes, that category is just not stopping, is
huge.
It? I mean, it's amazing.
Just huge.
And you know, you gotta if you're gonna have
markets all roast their own coffee for the most part now.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's amazing. If you have a good restaurant, you better darn well have a good cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't get away with having crummy coffee
it's
anymore.
It's like dessert, right?
It's like
you better
dessert.
Have good dessert, and you
right.
better have good
final
coffee, because that's right. the last thing people
right.
remember.
Well, and you know, when you read Jeff Cox, and he writes his restaurant reviews, you know, he hates it when a restaurant doesn't make its own desserts, you know, and they bring them in from outside. He thinks that's, you know, that's kind of a cop-out for a restaurant.
It's like artificial flowers.
It's like artificial flowers. All right. Well, we have just a few minutes left, and what I'd like to do is if someone honestly came to you and said to you, I want to open up a restaurant, I want you to tell me what two or three pieces of advice you would give someone who's considering
not run for the hills, but
not run for the hills, Michael. No, let's say they're,
no.
You know.
I did it for 30 years, and I have no regrets. You know, and it was great. It was really, really great. I just had to stop after 30 years, because anything 30 years is a big commitment, and I was ready to move on. But I think you have to have your eyes wide open and be really clear as to what you're getting yourself into. If you're opening a restaurant as naively as I did when I was 22 years old, just because you think you're a good cook, you're probably in a lot of trouble. I would advise somebody like that to go work in somebody else's restaurant for a year or two and make sure. I mean, anybody who's opening a restaurant should have 2 or 3 years experience in somebody else's
can
restaurant.
Can you imagine not?
I didn't.
Can you imagine not?
Well, I didn't.
Well, you didn't.
I didn't.
Okay.
I never
but
worked
nowadays,
in a restaurant when I opened my own restaurant.
I mean, how could you possibly not?
Right.
You've got to at least know the timing and just all the facets.
And you should work all the lousy parts of the restaurant business and get it and understand what you're getting yourself into before you get yourself into it. And obviously, we talked about before, you got to have a lot of money nowadays. So you got to have backers. You got to have somebody. And you really, if you're young and you're doing this, and you should be young and doing this, and by young I mean 30 or less, you know, usually the people under 30 don't have the money and they have the enthusiasm, you know. So you have to really put a good team together to make it do it. No one really does it single-handedly anymore. I mean, I'm watching the Starks do their number of restaurants, and they've got a great team. They do it. I mean, they lead the team and stuff like that. But
And I think that also helps, to a certain extent, avoid burnout.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because you can't, you know, and besides, you have people working with you. You need to have, what you say, a team, because you need to nurture people. They need to develop themselves. You need to have people who are working together moving forward, not just...
It's a team sport.
It's a team sport.
Team sport.
Exactly. That's good. Dan, what about you? What would you say?
Well, I'd say a few things is, one, do your homework and do it well and write a good business plan.
Yeah.
And lean on anybody you know that can help you do it. There's a lot of opportunities around here for people that can help you if you have friends or family to help you. Be totally honest about it. It's what sounds good can be very unsettling if, you know, you go into it and you have the wrong concept and haven't done put all the time you needed to put in ahead of time, and you start off and things aren't going well. So, you know, it's all the energy you put into it before you open will be worth your while when you open.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Very good advice. And yes, we do have lots of support systems, I think, here in Sonoma County. Certainly lots of good, solid restaurateurs to call upon for advice. We also have the Small Business Development Center, which has counselors who can help with opening up a small business. And we certainly have our selection of classes at Santa Rosa Junior College and our Culinary Arts Program, where lots of things can be learned, from the absolute basics of cooking to some of the service elements, the restaurant operations and business management part. So it's a good little business to be in, but it certainly takes a very big commitment. I want to put a plug in for our restaurant at Santa Rosa Junior College, the Culinary Cafe. We're open 3 days a week, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. We love to have folks come and visit us and see our students in action as they are learning to become restaurateurs and chefs and who knows what else. We like to say that reservations are certainly recommended, and our number at SRJC's Culinary Cafe and Bakery is 576-0279. Again, that's 576-0279, and we'll be opening for our spring semester on Wednesday, January 23rd. Gentlemen, Michael, Dan, thank you so much for joining me tonight. And we know that Michelle's having a great time with her family, and I want to thank Michelle for having us in. And we'll see you again next time. Thanks very much.
Mm-hmm. Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.
She's cooking something good, so let's bow our heads and pray.
Listen to the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner, now let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher said. Listen to the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner, now let's go.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the 286-horsepower TL Type S with a solar sensing climate control system. Learn more at Acura.com.